Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Good morning, Adi. Welcome to our podcast. We are very excited to have you on Crypto Nights.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Wonderful. Adi, why don't we start off by having you tell us a little bit about your background and applied blockchain that you're working on?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Adi Benari. I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Applied Blockchain, and now a new product as well called Fern. My background is as a techie. So I started life as a developer, studied computer science, and worked for some large corporates, led development teams, and worked as an architect as well, an enterprise architect. I spent 15 years in telecoms and 5 years in financial services, working in insurance and banking. And then 4 years ago, came across blockchain, specifically Ethereum when it came out, and smart contracts. Blew my mind as a techie, and I thought, I've got to do something. This is the time to start a company. And so I started Applied Blockchain.
Wow, that's a great story. And tell us about the progress. What motivated you to do what you do at Applied Blockchain, and what are some of the great stories that you have had along the way with clients?
Okay, so I guess when I made that decision 4 years ago, I didn't really have any ideas. I just thought the technology was super interesting. So I started building initially proof of concepts and applications, dApps, using Ethereum, using smart contracts, and really building solutions for clients and finding both startups and corporates that wanted to initially experiment, but eventually build out with blockchain solutions. And I think I came at it from quite a different angle to the people that were in the space at the time, because my background had been enterprise software. And really what I was looking at in my day job was enterprise integration. So how do big companies and systems talk to each other? And there was a lot of problems in that world. And when I looked at blockchain and this distributed ledger, and specifically smart contracts, where you could actually put data and business logic and rules into how that ledger, into what happens on that ledger, workflows and so on, I just thought this is super interesting. You can do things in a much more secure way than you could do before, in a much more efficient way. And that's the angle that I came at it when I first started Applied Blockchain.
Oh, that is fantastic. And do you work primarily with large enterprises, or do you work with startups? Are you helping companies in the ICO process or after they have raised money? Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what?
Okay, so we have a 50-50 mix. It's been like that from day one, startups versus corporate. Now, you've got to remember, we've been doing this 3 years now. So most of the startups we work with before the whole ICO phenomenon really took off. So these are startups that came out wanting to build solutions that were based on blockchain technology, but not necessarily at the time. They didn't really have the tools to use blockchain as a platform for fundraising. So these are kind of genuine blockchain projects that fundraised using a traditional method. So they would have had seed investors and VCs and so on. And we were building solutions for them in lots of different verticals. So there's a company called Appy, which is doing a bit like LinkedIn on the blockchain with validated credentials and resumes, a company that looks at legal smart contract, a company looking at did invoice financing, commodity repo financing, a new type of bank, the underbank, consumer data privacy. So this is really over a few years, we've already been looking and building solutions in all these different areas. And that's on the startups. And then the corporates, initially we did some work for the banks when they were doing proof of concepts, and then moved on to aviation, working with a company called CETA, which was owned by the airlines, doing work with airlines and airports and projects around drones as well. Then automotive, energy. We've been doing work with Shell, Vodafone in telecoms, even the United Nations. So a whole range of companies and industries, a whole range of different verticals, all with the same thing in common, really seeing an opportunity for doing things better using blockchain technology.
And what is the most common technology you're using for building blockchains or dApps?
Yeah, so we started with Ethereum and we never really moved off it.
That's a common thing.
Yes. So we have done work with Hyperledger, and we've certainly been experimenting with tools like BigchainDB and Tendermint, other platforms that are out there. Ethereum for us is, it just does what it says on the tin. It works. And actually, performance has been improving. Remember, we're working primarily on private blockchain testnet deployments. And so it still really works very well. You know, we're watching as there's a plethora of new platforms, each one saying that they've solved the problems of the previous one, and they've now cracked scalability and so on. From our perspective, we're a bit cautious, so we don't think it's quite that simple. And we think, if I compare the platforms, I kind of think of Ethereum and Bitcoin and the sort of long-standing public ledgers as having all the belts and braces in terms of security and trust and integrity. And a lot of these newer solutions that are coming along and really making quite bold claims, for me, they're kind of stripping off some of those belts and braces. And of course, that means you get better performance. But is it really okay to take those off? We're not really sure, because that might expose some vulnerabilities in the long term that we haven't really seen yet. So we're a bit nervous about moving on to some of those newer platforms just at the moment. And for most of the use cases we work on, the performance we can get out of an Ethereum testnet is absolutely fine.
Is private blockchain an oxymoron? You know, you kind of have blockchain and you're thinking, it's a tool for the community. It's for, sure, it's a distributed ledger. It's supposed to enable the crowd to collaborate. And yes, then we call it private. Can you explain that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, people get quite religious about this. you know, I can certainly understand where different people are coming from. For me, you know, I've always looked at this from a technical perspective, right? Because that's my background. And for me, the thing with blockchain is it really brings security, right? That's the thing it brings. It brings trust through security. And that trust is because you're distributing the infrastructure, right? You're distributing the ledger. And so you've got more parties controlling equally controlling the security of the ledger, and therefore making it more difficult for one party or for a small group to defraud the ledger. And that's true in the public chains and it's true in the private chains. That for me is what blockchain is. Now, how secure you view that ledger to be really depends on the consensus algorithm you have in place versus the propensity of the holders of the ledger to collude to undermine it, right? And obviously on a public chain, if you've got 10,000 nodes out there, the chances of them colluding are probably quite slim, although there may be a small number of bodies behind them, in which case the risk is higher. Whereas if you have what we call a private network, which may be distributed again to potentially thousands of parties, it may be more secure. On the other hand, you could have 1,000 parties who are all quite potentially open to fraud, guarding a ledger, versus 3 where there's no way in the world, absolutely no way they're ever going to collude. And that blockchain of 3 might be more secure than anything. So at the end of the day, it's down to the trust of the entities that are controlling the ledger and their propensity to collude, to defraud it. It's not as simple as public does this and private is that. That's for me what it comes down to.
And what are the most popular, I mean, you have done, I think you said about 20 projects. That's quite a few projects. So What do you see as the most common consensus protocols across private blockchains that you have built?
So we've primarily been using Ethereum Parity, and the consensus mechanism there is proof of authority. We've seen that. So to be honest, we see private blockchains as a stepping stone. We would love to be able to deploy all our solutions to the public network, but the people that we're building the applications for want to be able to scale massively from day one. They want to be able to tell their investors and their customers that they are on a platform that will provide that scalability for them. And we can't guarantee that for them on the current public network. And there's obviously the cost attached to the transactions, which they have to factor in as well. So for that reason, we said, okay, we're not going on the public network, so let's create a testnet and start with that and build trust by building out that testnet with a view to eventually migrating public network or to whatever, you know, the blockchain world morphs into, right? Network chains of chains and so on. So that's kind of where we're starting and why we're building on these public chains initially. But yeah, in terms of consensus, so we use Parity, we use proof of authority, but we see Ethereum as the most mature smart contracts platform out there, and we are focused on smart contracts. And then proof of authority we see as a first step. For private networks, the general consensus is towards practical Byzantine fault tolerant consensus. Something like Tendermint, for example, is a great implementation, and we see a sort of general movement towards that, both from Parity, and we've seen it in Hyperledger, and we see it in others as well. So this, the kind of attack vector that deals with, seems to be acceptable in most private network.
And proof of authority, is there a multi-sig involved? Is there multiple people that have to be authorized together, or what do you see?
Yeah, that's correct. You choose a subset of your nodes to be authorities, and they're the ones that have to sign all blocks as long as they're available within a given time period. And that scales very well. And for these relatively small, still very private groups. That kind of works for now. But if you think long term, you want to have a bigger group, you want to be able to provide a more secure solution, then I think, again, the movement towards a sort of tendermint-like consensus algorithm. Seems, at the moment, that's what we're seeing as the most common path forward for that.
Great. And the other question I wanted to talk about, which is on the minds of a lot of people, is security. Because, I mean, you and I have been, I'm a PhD in computer science, worked in software development for a while and all of that. So we all know the precept that testing only shows the presence of bugs, never their absence. The only thing that kind of builds our confidence, just like you said, there is a reason you believe in Ethereum. It's been long-standing.
This is it. For me, Ethereum has been out there in the wild. I mean, Bitcoin, obviously, even more so. Ethereum's been out there in the wild, dealing with all these attacks, morphing itself to deal with them and all the different situations. I mean, it's been battle tested in a way that no enterprise software is battle tested.
Yep.
So, you know, it's just a no brainer for us at the moment.
So, and you and I have been in development of software for large enterprises where, yes, quality is important, testing is important, removing bugs is important, but it seems to reach a level of cruciality, some, you know, a criticality when it comes to blockchain development, because here errors can be pretty expensive, pretty costly. Of course, a lot of it is mitigated because you're calling their private blockchains probably within a boundary. But do you see that security has been a major issue for you, your clients, the last 20 clients you dealt with?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the reality is, if you're on the public blockchain, then obviously that's a very different environment. If you're in a private blockchain network, you're typically inside either your own environment and expanding that out, you know, through a secure network as a startup, or doing the same thing as a corporate. That's the reality, right? You're within virtual private networks and you're within secure networks. The attack vectors are then assumed to be what can the different players within that network do to undermine each other? And that's why you look more at, you know, the practical Byzantine fault tolerant model and then the Byzantine attack versus, you know, what proof of work and, you know, proof of stake now in the future is trying to solve. So that's how we look at it. Now, from our perspective, specifically on applied blockchain, we're kind of the layer on top. So for us, there's a lot of smart people that are working on the underlying protocol on the blockchain. There's a plethora of these solutions coming out, all really trying to solve this, for us, the same problem, you know, from lots of different ways. The public network solutions are out there being attacked and evolving and really proving how to deal with these, with all the different attack vectors. We're building applications on top of that. So for us, I hate to say, but we almost don't care, because we're building the application in a way that will work with the blockchain, however the blockchain evolves. Whether it's Ethereum or whether it's something else, whether the smart contract in Solidity or whether Solidity moves on to WebAssembly and whatever the consensus mechanism might be underneath it. It's actually, for us, it's the other way around. We want to protect the applications that we're building, the applications on top and those in the smart contract, from the potential evolution of the platform, so that we can protect the investment of those customers that we're building for.
And when do typically clients come in? I understand that your name says it all, right? Applied blockchain. So your applications on top of blockchain, I get that. Yeah. So when do clients come to you? Do they come to you and say, Ari, I'm thinking of building a blockchain, or we already decided and this is what we're planning to, we need your help in building that? Where in the life cycle of this thought process flow do they come to you?
It's pretty random. So first of all, you know, we've been going almost 3 years now. I've got a couple of guys working in sales, and you know, they've never done an outbound call, so it's all kind of dealing with people. You know, we're in a space now which is very busy, and there's a lot going on. There's a lot of people interested, and there's a lot of people looking for expertise. And having been through the real cycle of actually building these things, putting them into production, building the full stack, thinking about the architecture end to end, not just the blockchain bit, but what does the application on top needs to look like? What are the user interactions like? Where do you put the keys, the wallets? How does that fit in with your existing systems and all that kind of stuff? You know, there still aren't that many people that have kind of been through all of that, and we have a great team that does it. So that's how we, that's kind of how we service the customers that come. Now, of course, initially there was a lot of education where people had heard about blockchain. There was a lot of buzz, and it was really more about, trying to explain to people, you know, it's just technology at the end of the day. It's good for certain things. It might not be good for others. It's not going to solve all the world's problems. But actually, it does something super efficient and interesting, in certain uses. And it was really more about that. now we get people coming to us knowing exactly what they want, saying, you know, we've actually tried to build it ourselves, or we've been to someone else, and now, you know, we want it done properly or whatever. But that's how it works.
Absolutely. People may not realize that in 3 years in blockchain industry is like 30 years in the traditional software industry, right? You're probably the most experienced. Remember the time, Adi, when somebody said they were running a services organization for 3 years, we say, oh, you're brand new. But in the blockchain world, you say 3 years, you say, wow, you're a veteran.
it's tremendous. It's been really fast moving, and we've been very lucky as well. We were lucky at the beginning to get some great clients, and that brought more with them. So yeah.
I want to dig in a little into that thing that you said, you know, these days you're getting more mature clients and they kind of come to you and said, we want to get it built right.
Yes.
So does it happen pretty often that either they tried to build it on their own or they tried with someone, they got their hands burned and then came to you?
Yeah, we do get that a lot.
I wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
So because I get that all the time, being just running this podcast show, I get people calling me and saying, do you recommend any, you know, service providers? Could be legal, operational, technological, whatever, that blockchain building and so on and so forth, marketing, community building. We get all kinds of questions, fundraising. So something I did not expect, quite frankly, when we started this podcast, but the inbound, like
you said,
So funny, isn't it? So that's why I wanted to ask you that question is, what would be a set of criteria, if you could be prescriptive to somebody that is looking, what do they look for? How do they verify or validate that somebody talking to would be the right organization or team to help them build their private blockchain?
So, I hate to say it, but actually it's just like, it's really just like any professional that you would want to deal with. I'd probably talk to their customers and get references. And see what they've done in the past and what their previous customers' experiences have been. Because I think it's, you know, because it's such a fast growing space, there's so much interest in it. There's so many newcomers. It's really very difficult and it's very complex. I mean, blockchain, the basic principles, a lot of people understand now, but actually with all the different evolution and direction that technology is taking, it's actually becoming more and more complicated. So really to make sure that you've got people with you that appreciate all that and are therefore advising you on the right solution for you, you really need to validate, you know, who it is that's doing the work for you. And personally, I would do it the same way as if I was looking for a dentist. I'd want to speak to the customer and make sure it worked well for them last time and they're happy.
And do you have in scope and out of scope? There are some obviously that became your clients, but are there others where you said, you know, we may not be the right people kind of a thing?
First of all, there's a lot that we've said over the years where we've just said you don't need blockchain for this because of the hype and you know what we saw initially was there was a lot of cynicism because you know a lot of people certainly in the corporate world saw Bitcoin and thought this has negative connotations for us and dismissed blockchain as Bitcoin. Then you kind of explained that actually the technology itself is super interesting, whether or not you buy into to the cryptocurrency side of it. And then people sort of made the shift to the other side. Oh, this is going to completely transform industries and going to solve all the world's problems. And of course, at the end of the day, it's a specific technology. So the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Yes, it will absolutely transform industries and it is a revolution in terms of tech, but only for certain things and in certain areas. You know, it doesn't solve all your problems. We would get people coming to us and coming up with all these use cases. Well, yes, if you did that and you could do it with blockchain, it would make things better. But actually, you could do it with a regular database and you'd still probably get 90% of the value out of it. So I like to think that we've been super honest about that and upfront and turned a lot of people away because we didn't genuinely feel that they needed the technology. And the same thing also goes on the fundraising side. So, you know, our background has been the technology project. And so again, the projects that we've taken on are the ones where they're actually using the technology to get the value and to make a difference and to build something that can be built without it.
Yeah. My first question is usually that, you know, do you have an organic need for a blockchain? And 9 out of 10 times they just need a database.
Right. So this also comes back to the private versus public, which is if you're, you know, then okay, you're going to build something on blockchain. Well, if it's not going to scale yet on the public chain, but you needed to scale immediately, you're deploying it on a private one. But where's that really going to sit? And who's really looking after it? And therefore, is it really trusted? Can it really be trusted any more than if you were just hosting a regular database? And for me, honestly, most blockchain solutions that are being built out there fall into one of those two categories. You can either put them on a public blockchain today when they can actually be used by everybody who needs to use them, and it's fine from a scale and cost perspective, or they're sitting on a private blockchain somewhere, where in most cases they're controlled by probably a single entity, in which case they don't need blockchain at all. So we are kind of stuck between these two worlds at the moment.
So can you give us one or two examples, maybe stories of private blockchains you've built that you're very excited about? They turned out to be pretty successful and they've done well and they're using it.
Mm-hmm. I could take you through a few. So one which I mentioned earlier is called Appy, which is, it's kind of like, resume verification. So where did you study? Which school did you study at? Who are your employers? And a verified view of that. And it's really looking at the recruitment industry, and making it much easier for employers to take people on more quickly without having to perform validations that they have to do today. And we're not just looking at career history. We're looking at all sorts of requirements that different industries have. This is an application that's been built over 2 years now. So it's not just something that's come up now and doing some fundraising. It's a mature application.
Wow.
That's live, which has got corporates that are now starting to adopt it as well as small companies and SMEs. We've got another one called Signatize, which is really a very simple, solving a very simple problem, which is who's allowed to sign what inside a company. So if you and I, we have a contract, how do I know that you're the right person in the company that can actually sign that contract? Something called a signatory list, which companies should have and maintain. But what often happens is you have fraud related to not having open communication of that signatory list. So, for example, somebody leaves a company and they still sign payments and sign things unbeknown to the counterpart that they've actually left. And we have fraud even in the public sector in the UK here where that kind of fraud is committed. So Signatize is a platform which solves that by managing the signatory list through smart contracts on the blockchain and sharing them through the chain. We've also been working with Nuggets, which is a solution for consumer data privacy and in particular payments. Bab, which is an application for a new type of bank, which really turns the banking model upside down and offers banking services to people in the developing world who wouldn't normally have access to these types of services. A company called Inventuras, which does IP, so pre-patent IP registration, using blockchain. So a whole raft of these types of solutions, that we've been working on for a long time, and it's not just coming up with the idea now. These are applications that have been built out in the real world, talking to real customers already for quite a while now. So it's a relatively mature application. Some of those that I mentioned in production already. And actually in the corporate world as well, we've been commissioned now to put our fourth application into production for fourth enterprise. So things are really starting to move on that side of things as well.
Well, that's very exciting. So what do you see as the future in the next 3 years? I mean, 3 years already is a long, very long time in the blockchain world, as we talked about. But if you look to the future, the next 3 years, what kind of advances are you seeing?
First of all, super interesting. If you look at the space right now, and especially with the proliferation of token sales and the number of platforms that just emerged, you look at a lot of people now trying to solve the same problem. And if I think in 3-5 years time, how many of those would still be around, right? Because some of these problems, I mean, almost everything in blockchain is network, right? And network solutions, network systems typically have a winner takes all, right? We've seen this in the social media world. And we've seen it on the web, and it's true of any network. It doesn't make technical sense or efficiency to have lots and lots and lots of different technical solutions for the same thing. Right? If we're all on a network in a certain industry or trying to solve the same problem, we need to all be as connected as possible, right? And that means using the same technology standard or the same underlying platform or the same token or whatever it is. So I think there will be consolidation. There'll be winners and losers. I mean, just on the platform itself, the number of blockchain platforms that are out there now, all solving scalability and so on, doesn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't make any sense. I think that there will be winners here. And we don't know who those are. I mean, it might be that the winner isn't there yet. We haven't seen him yet, but it might be one of the platforms we have today. But I don't think it will be all of them. And the same thing for industry. So I mentioned to you, Aku, with validated resumes. There's a whole host of those out there now, but there will be winners.
I'm glad you took that very common approach of using that.
Yeah. And then on the blockchain itself, I think again in that same vein, things have to connect together. Now, there's a few different schools of thoughts here. I think some are, one blockchain to scale and to rule them all, and the others are networks of network, right? So there's a hub and lots of networks attached to each other. And we can see this if you look at Ethereum and sharding, or you look at some of the others that claim to be super scalable already. I'm not going to mention any names. And then and you look at private chains, or you look at like the Gavin Wood and Polkadot and Cosmos and Overledger and all these others, which are all about interconnected chains. Those are kind of the two directions that we're seeing, and Plasma probably being something in the middle. So that's where we think it's going. I'd probably subscribe in the medium term to the chains of chains, and maybe in the longer term, eventually, like a fully sharded, scalable blockchain when that eventually comes about. In the meantime, if we look at the private world, we've also got all of these private blockchain platforms, right? Which especially the enterprise are using, like Hyperledger and Corda and these other ones. And they're almost another world at the moment, but we think that they will, again, in the spirit of getting more value out of blockchain by being more connected, they will have to connect together. And it doesn't make any sense for me that they're all in the same industry using different technologies and different platforms. This is really hard. It's not even as simple as messaging. You think about, I told you I've got an integration background, and you it sounds like you come from that world as well. Trying to get companies to just send messages to each other in the same format was a nightmare, and nobody ever got through that. And now it's not even as simple as that. You have to get them on the same technology platform. So the blockchain is a platform, and they have to be on the same one to be able to transact together. And that's even harder. So I think those problems are going to take a long, long time to solve, because getting all those parties all on and getting them onto the same solutions and to standardize it, that's a long play. Let's see what happens.
I like that angle that you took of networks. That's what I'm liking, and the winner takes all. We have seen the FAMGANs of the world emerge in the last 20 years. It was very similar play out happening all over again. You had so many internet companies 20 years ago, you didn't know which one would win. And then we realized, oh my God, in each industry, there'll be one big player. And that's exactly.
But here we hope it will be a completely open platform rather than a single corporate entity or a small number of those. I think really for this to work, it has to be something that's completely open, in the spirit of the original technology itself, distributed and open and not controlled by any one party.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what they say, right? Between Google, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, LinkedIn, you have these four or five companies, and then that's your digital identity, whether you like it or not.
I think the world, you see the world of fashion and technology, every few years it swings in the opposite direction, right? What was fashionable today becomes unfashionable and something new comes along. And I think in tech, we're going to have exactly the same thing. We've had a generation now where everybody's happy to put everything out there in the open, not really realizing the consequences, and four or five companies really sitting on top of all of that. And I think the consequences will start coming through and people will realize that. I'm seeing some of that already. Yeah. And the next generation will just swing completely the other way. I'm not sharing anything with anyone, and I need to be in complete control. And I think that's where cryptography and blockchain being part of that really come into play. And it will almost be the sort of meat eaters going to vegans. It will be a complete swing to I want to be in complete control of everything. And that's the next generation of a lot of these, especially blockchain-based solutions that we're seeing. I think that's where it'll go.
Awesome. So I take it that you're not necessarily specializing in helping companies go to the blockchain and raise an ICO. You're not involved in token generation events, are you?
Well, that's not true. So to be honest, we weren't, we were kind of focused on building applications, but actually our clients came to us saying, can you help us with this? For our next set of funds, you know, it makes sense for us. We're already a blockchain application. Actually, there's a token model that makes sense here. You know, we would like to follow through with that. And certainly on the technical side, that's what we've been helping them with.
Tell us a couple of minutes about Fern and who it's useful for.
Yeah. Okay. So thinking about everything we just said, where you've got the public blockchain, which we feel we can't really deploy some of the solutions that need to scale immediately to. And on the other hand, you've got these private blockchains, which are really far too private at the moment. We think that there needs to be something in the middle. And we think that these private blockchains need to be encouraged to become, to become all distributed. And that's really what Fern looks at. So Fern says, okay, you can deploy to a private blockchain now, but prove to everybody that this private blockchain is actually a distributed network where control is truly distributed between a number of independent parties. And so what Fern does is it provides a set of open smart contracts for encouraging parties to come in and offer services to the private networks, such as hosting nodes, master nodes, and also offering external services outside the blockchain. So API services like KYC, AML, key management, password recovery, information oracles, and so on. So all these parties outside of the application that's sitting on that private blockchain would be brought in through a standard set of interfaces. Their services would be measured, their reputation built up, and their rewards transferred through a standard open set of smart contracts. And their reputation will be consolidated across all the different private blockchains that use Fern into a single reputation that can be used to then, for future blockchain applications to decide who to pick to use to expand their own networks and make them more trustless. Does that make sense?
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. What you've done is you've taken all the experiences and the, what you have been building over and over again and the challenges that you have faced and factored them out and built a product. I think that makes a lot of sense. It is the best way of doing.
So, I mean, I'll tell you what, the deal was that we need to build this thing anyway for our customers.
Yeah.
Because this is the only way for them to build out their solutions, to really make the most of this blockchain technology they've built on in the first place, and to make their solutions more distributed. So we would have to put this in place anyway. So we figured if they need it, the chances are lots of others will need and use the same type of solution as well. And we might as well make it open in the process. And the token model for us really makes sense in this type of environment because the incentives around reputation, incentivizing good behavior, disincentivizing bad behavior, getting mass adoption through having lots of parties having stake through the token and influencing governance of the platform itself, making it open and taking out those competitive forces. That's really what made a lot of sense for us.
Fantastic. I wish you all the best as you develop Fern out. It looks pretty exciting.
Thank you very much.
Are there other questions that I was supposed to ask you that I did not ask? Adi.
Wow. No, I think there's, I think we've covered some ground.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. And I think it'll be a good idea, given the kind of things that you're doing, to have you back periodically and talk to our listeners. You know, that way you can give us an update of the exciting projects that you're working on. This has been fun talking to you.
No, that would be an absolute pleasure. And, you never know what's coming next in this space. So it really will be super interesting to look in a year's time and see where we are versus this point in time now.
We're all very fortunate to be here in the now and being a part of this whole process. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I wish you the very best, Adi, and you and your team, of course.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.